We love supporting and promoting the creators of musical theater throughout the world, and we would love to have your support as well. Go to musicaltheaterradio.com and click on the Become a Patron button, because a supportive community is a strong community. Welcome back to another episode of Be Our Guest here on Musical Theater Radio. I am your host, as always, Jean-Paul Jovanoff. If we are to look at the resume of today's guest, they would have a little bit of everything on it. An author, a love coach, a founder of RGN Marketing, on the board of New York Theater Barn, a Tony-nominated producer, and there's probably a few things on there we may just discover today. Let's learn that together. All right, it gives me great pleasure to welcome to the show Robin Gorman Newman. Robin, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Awesome. It's great to see you again and talk to you. It's been a while.
Oh, same here. I know. It's great to see anyone these days.
Right? So true. So for our listeners and our guests, I always like to find out a little bit about who I'm talking to today. So who is Robin in 30 seconds? So give us the 30-second bio of Robin.
Robin is a multitasker who is hugely passionate about theater and many things, but theater really is my heart from a young age. And I just feel like it has the power to change lives. It's definitely changed mine. And I love putting art into the world. And I'm also mensch conscious. And we'll probably talk about my book, you know, How to Marry a Mensch. But that's my other soapbox, so to speak, is that I think it's really important to be kind and take a look at how you're showing up in the world. And I really try hard to model that.
Nice. So when you were growing up, were you always into theater and musical theater? Or is that something you discovered a little bit later in life?
My mom used to take me to theater, and I grew up with show tune records in the house. I remember Men of La Mancha playing a lot. I'm not sure why that particular show, but I guess it was one of my mom's favorites. And Dr. Doolittle, that was another one that we heard a lot. And probably a little My Fair Lady sprinkled in. So yeah, it was just kind of a thing. And my mom took me and got the bug early on. I even did a little bit of acting in high school. I wasn't particularly good. I was an angel in Anything Goes, and I couldn't sing, but they had mercy on me. So I always just wanted to be with theater peeps.
Okay. And yeah. Was there anything else you wanted to do outside of theater? Or like, was there another career you thought about? Or is theater kind of where you figured you were going to be going?
You know, that's such an interesting question. When I went to Hofstra University for undergrad, mm-hmm. and I was the arts editor of a school newspaper, I was actually an economics major.
Oh, believe really? It
or not. Yes, because I basically didn't really know what I wanted to do, or what I thought I wanted to do maybe didn't feel real mm-hmm. necessarily. And that was to be a theater critic. And mm-hmm. as the arts editor for one of the school newspapers, when I graduated, I wanted to get a job at the New York Times, or I always aimed high, Jean-Paul.
Yeah.
And when the primary critic at the time got hired, I'm blanking on the name at the moment, but Frank Rich. And I felt like he took my job. Like, and I'm like, where do I go from here? The Times just hired somebody. And I don't know what I was thinking, but so I kind of went off in other directions and wound up getting involved in cosmetics for a profession for a while. But then I always wrote. I still found places to do theater reviews. I wrote for the Queens Tribune because I was living in Queens at the time, and for City Guide, and I did personality profiles. So I always kept my hand in it, even though it didn't become a full-time gig for me.
See, we did discover something new on your resume. The cosmetics and the economics.
Yes. Yes, and I do love cosmetics even to this day. Especially on Zoom. You have to be Zoom ready. Got to have a good lipstick.
So you went for economics. Once you got out and you graduated, what did you do? Was it right into theater, or was it more cosmetics and things like that?
Well, economics was really more the idea of my parents pushing me in the direction of, I was a French minor in school.
Okay.
So I thought I'd get a job for the UN. Doing what? I have absolutely no idea. But they thought, oh, business, that's practical. Yeah, it was the hardest major in the school. And I almost flunked my own major, but okay. Because I wasn't good at it.
Yeah.
So I started in cosmetics, or Ralph Lauren Cosmetics, which I loved, actually. And but I worked in a boring department. I worked in package development, which was so technical. Like I was typing up bottle specs and labels, and you know, it's an entry-level job. You're not really doing anything that stimulating. Yeah. And but because I love to write, and that's something that's always carried me throughout my life, I sort of nicely nudged my way into the marketing product development area. And I said, you know, hey, I could write. And they actually gave me the opportunity to write some copy for the products. And I got so excited because they chose one of my names for a tote bag. They, Ralph Lauren used to give away these products, you know, like buy one, get this for free. So they picked one of my names, the Spirited Satchel, and it went on the hang tag for the bag. And I framed the hang tag and I was so honored. And then I would come up with names of lipsticks and other things like that. And I love that piece of it. And then I ultimately actually segued into PR and doing PR for cosmetics and all kinds of other companies. And then even with that, I've always sprinkled theater into like everything I've done, even if there was no real window for it.
Yeah.
I barred that window open and I made it happen. And I had one of my clients at a PR firm was Fran Wilson Cosmetics, and they made a line of mood lipsticks.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if you've even heard about this. And they were like these bizarre colors. They were black and green and purple. But when you put them on your lips, they turned to a shade that matched your complexion. Mm-hmm. And I came up with this idea to do a cross promotion with Tony and Tina's wedding.
Oh,
yes. And we did a Fran Wilson mood lipstick challenge, Tony and Tina's wedding thing, where the people of the cast wore the lipstick. And I don't even remember what else we did, but I remember being down at Tony and Tina's wedding and just making this happen and just feeling like I was so in my element. I would do anything just to get into a theater, and no matter what the activity was, I was ready to show up.
So you've got you're doing the theater stuff, you're writing for the cosmetic. Tell us, when did you write the book?
Yeah, that was, my first job in PR was when I was doing cosmetics and some other things for a small boutique firm. Then I left and I started working for a mid-sized firm. And I always joke and say that I did everything from shampoo to shit, pardon my language, because one of my clients was Breck Hair Care Products, which I loved. I was part of the search for the Breck girl, which was fun. And the other company was a compost factory. And if you think it didn't stink, it did. And that was like the tagline sort of, that it didn't smell, like, you're right. But it was during that time that I always wanted to write a book, and I didn't know what that book was going to be. And I was commuting back and forth. I was living in Queens and working in the city, and I kept a notebook, and I would just jot down any random thought that came to my mind. And one day I looked in that notebook and I realized, oh my God, I think there's like the germ of a book in here. And that book was How to Meet a Mensch in New York, my first one. And I think it came from clearly my own experience of being single. And it feels like it's back in the Stone Age now, because the web, it was on the cusp of the web. Mm-hmm. So we didn't have the resources then that you have now. I couldn't just type in Google, you know, great singles events for the weekend. So I became like the consummate researcher in my social group. And because I've always been good at poking around, but this time I was poking around reading magazines and making phone calls and getting on a gazillion lists and getting hard copy physical mail. It was craziness. And because of that, people were always asking me, well, what should we do and where should we go? So then I got this idea, you know, wouldn't it be helpful if there was some compendium where people didn't have to look in 15 million places? What if there was like a Zagat type guide for singles? And that became my first book, How to Meet a Mensch in New York. And Mensch is a decent, responsible person. And it's broken up by category. So it's everything from nonprofit, because I'm a big fan of doing good and getting involved in that way, to sports activities, to travel, to networking groups. And my hope around it was to get people to think out of the box a little bit and not be so stuck in doing the blatant singles events that they felt like they had to go to because it was easy and it had the label on it. And it seemed obvious, yet it might not have been working for them.
So obviously that first book led to the second book, the How to Marry a Man.
Yes. Well, what happened was it was really nuts, Jean-Paul, because I wound up on the Today Show with the first book.
Wow.
And I did not see that coming. And CNN. I mean, I did some major press, and I think it was around the word mensch, because it's a word that if you know it, you love it, because nothing takes the place of it. No one other word can sum it up.
Yeah.
But if you don't know it, there's a curiosity around it. So I was doing a lot of explaining at first, which was kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. But then after a while, it kind of became a little more pop culturally relevant. But what I noticed at the time too was that even the Brits loved the word. And I wound up doing interviews in London and New Zealand, like major press there. Wow. And I'm like, this is like craziness. And because the book was a tri-state area. So it didn't sell in London. So I enjoyed doing the press, but like to what end, really? Huh. So that's why the second book was born, How to Meet a Mensch in New York. I mean, How to Marry a Mensch, rather.
Yeah.
And it's really not about marrying a mensch. It's really about what you want for yourself. But marry a mensch, you know, sounded good. Yeah. But in the context of that, and also leading up to that book, I started working as a love coach for singles.
Wow.
Because what happened was I was doing all these speaking gigs. And one of my friends said to me one day, you know, you really should offer a personal advice. And I said, well, yeah, that sounds good. But what does that even mean? You know, I'm not a therapist. I'm not a matchmaker. Like, who am I? And I said, you know what? I mean, I could see the relevance because everyone's needs are completely different. So I just decided to put it out there when I was doing interviews. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I was regular on the Joan Hamburg Show on WOR. And she was so supportive of me, a huge fan of my book. And I announced it during one of my interviews that I'm available for consults. I didn't even say love coach because I had no idea what I was actually doing at that time. But I figured if the phone rang, I would figure it out. The phone rang. And then I was like, uh-oh, be careful what you wish for. Now, who am I in the context of this? So I started by calling myself a personal trainer for your love life. And I'm like, okay, that's a little wordy, but yeah, that kind of fits. Then I thought, oh, I don't know. What about social strategist?
Yeah.
Is that like a little more sexy? I'm like, I don't know. That sounds a little clinical or something. And then I came up with love coach. And I honestly think that I coined that term, and I can't prove it. I didn't trademark it, but I have the website lovecoach.com.
Yeah.
So I really do think it's my baby.
Wow.
And so I started doing one-on-one consulting, which I still do to this day, and helping people think out of the box. I'll create a plan of action for someone. I work with people of all ages, all backgrounds. And even during the pandemic, I've been pretty active because I don't think it has to be lost time. I think virtually you can make some really meaningful connections. So I love doing that work. It's really gratifying. And from that came the birth of How to Marry a Mensch, because I had all the advice now that I was dishing to people. I also interviewed people for the book, it's so heartfelt. I spoke to couples who met their mensches, and I shared those stories and why that matters. And it touches me even to this day to read those stories, because looking for a mensch and being one isn't always on someone's radar. And people tend to date the familiar. They tend to, you know, play in the same sandbox a lot because they're just used to it and it's easy. But the thing is, just because something's convenient and easy, if it's not working for you, then maybe you need to change that up a little bit. And that's where I can come in and try to empower somebody to move past their comfort zone and discover some other cool stuff that might actually enhance their lives, and they just didn't have it on their radar for whatever reason.
Wow, that's wonderful. you help bring those together. So you have the book, and then it brings in the theater side, because I believe I read that it's in early development for becoming a musical.
So yes.
How did that come about?
I know, also craziness. You know, I have to say, like, my whole path was completely unexpected in this arena. As much as I love theater, I honestly did not see it coming. And a number of years ago, I was poking around in theater and wanting to do something, didn't really know what that could look like. And a theater producer who I loved, Randall Reggett, Did you know Randall?
I don't think I've met Randall, no.
I mean, talk about a mensch. He was definitely a Broadway mensch and beyond, real sweetheart. And I connected with him somehow, and he took me under his wing. And he was inviting me to workshops and different things. And I was just keeping my options open. Had no idea I was ultimately going to go the producing route. Mm-hmm. And one day out of nowhere, he said to me, Mensch the Musical. There should be a Mensch the Musical. And I was like, what? I thought he was crazy. He said, yeah, like no brainer. I'm like, okay, sounds good. He's like, and you should write it. I'm like, and I should write it? Like, excuse me? I said, do you know I have no playwriting experience whatsoever? Doesn't matter. I said, well, what do you mean it doesn't matter? He said, well, if it needs work, we'll make it better. Yeah. I said, well, I'm sure you will, but that won't feel good for me. I said, I don't know about that. And I went home and I'm like, this is intriguing, but how do I feel about it? And I couldn't get it out of my mind. Obviously, I was so flattered, mm-hmm. but it came out of complete left field. So I went back to him and I begged him to let me, can I at least co-write it with someone? And he said, speak to my attorney. I said, all right. So I spoke to his attorney, and his attorney, of course, is a mouthpiece for him. Yeah. And he's like, no, you can't co-write it. It's more complicated than a prenup.
Oh, wow.
You don't want to do that. He said, don't worry about it. Same thing. Randall will make it better if it's not good. I said, yeah, but I don't want it to suck. Okay, all right. I'm obviously not winning this one.
Yeah.
So I decided to take playwriting classes. Wow. And I studied at NYU. I took various classes at primary stages. And I was going to give it a go. And one day I saw a show off Broadway that I fell in love with. It was called The Kid. Mm-hmm. And it was at New Group. And I had this major aha moment, and I walked out and I said to my friend, if there ever was a Mensch the Musical, I want it to feel like this. And I made the decision, I wanted that book writer to write it. So I went after him with every ounce of strength I had and practically begged him to write it. And he said, no, I can't, I'm working on other things right now. And I was so disheartened, but he was lovely. And I thought, oh, okay. You know, wasn't meant to be with him. But then I got this idea, maybe he could coach me. You know, what if I did try to write it actually, and he could critique it and give me support and confidence. So I circled back to him and I said, do you do that? And he said, yes, he would do that, because he was also teaching at NYU. It was like perfect.
Yeah.
So I started doing that, and he was so great. We're actually friends now. Michael Zam is his name. Huge talent and complete sweetheart. And I actually got to the point of having a draft, and then Randall passed away.
Oh,
no. So sad, so unexpected. I was, you know, so hurt and mourning and everything. Lost my cheerleader, you know, lost a lovely guy who had befriended me.
Yeah.
And so I dropped it. I dropped the project. And then fast forward, I got involved in theater producing, and we can talk a little about that.
Yeah.
And then I started just kind of mentioning it to people that, you know, this Randall Reggett had this idea for a show, and he was so beloved and known by so many people in the industry. And every time I mentioned Mensch the Musical, people were like, oh, I love that. That sounds cute. And then I just decided, you know what, Randall would want me to do this. Maybe now I can do it, because now I have experience as a producer. I was in the industry. I was in a completely different place.
Yep.
And I was actually in the throes of hiring an attorney, because I had just come off being a producer on Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have an attorney. And I said, you know what, going forward, because clearly I'm going to be in this industry and I should have some representation, because things come up. You never know what project comes your way. And in my searching for an attorney, I started mentioning Mensch as well. And I wound up getting connected by an attorney who I wound up not hiring, but also a lovely guy, connected me to a director and writer. He said, I think she'd be interested in your project. And again, I wasn't even selling my project.
Yeah.
This is like happened every time to me. I'm not even pushing it and people are coming to me.
Yeah.
So I reached out to her, and yes, she was interested, but she wanted to co-write it. I'm like, oh, here we go again. So the writer's seat. And now it's a co-writing thing, which feels even more complicated to me. And Randall didn't want me to do that. Yeah. So I said, you know what? I'm going to finally stand my ground. I don't think I should be the one to write this. And not because I can't, because I was reaching the point, well, maybe I actually could. But my feeling around it is that I want to be able to judge it. I want to be able to bring ideas in the room. Yes, I want to share my experience. I have a boatload of that. But I can't be objective if I've written it. And I really value my eye. I think I'm very discerning. I think I'm kind of tough as a theater critic. And I want to be able to be tough on my own work because I want it to be amazing. I want the show to really obviously do as well as possible. So, but in doing that, and I told the gal, you know what, I don't really want to co-write it with someone, but thank you. She said, you know, I know this gal in your neck of the woods, and I think you just might really like each other. And I didn't even know why, you know, there was no agenda per se. And she said, why don't I connect you? I said, okay. So she did. And she wasn't that close in my neck of the woods, which people think you live in New York. You're all in the same neck of the woods because this gal was not in New York. I'm like, it doesn't exactly work that way, but okay, you know, have car will travel.
Yeah.
And so we wound up meeting for brunch or lunch, whatever it was, in my neck of the woods. And we just clicked. And I was just telling her where I was at in theater. And I mentioned Mensch. We had a second luncheon, just liked each other. And she said to me, I want to produce it with you. And I almost fell off my chair. I almost started to cry, actually. And I was like, oh my God. Like, and again, I wasn't asking her, do you want to produce it with me?
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of like, you know, like you had me at hello. It was one of those things. And I said, really? And she's like, yeah. And she had development experience too, which was great because I didn't have that. I had the Broadway experience, yeah. And some off-Broadway as well. But I hadn't initiated a project. And I said, wow, that's like amazing. And at that point, I had hired my attorney and we wound up connecting and have a partnership. And now we're producing it together.
Wow.
And we're in the early stages. We have our composer lyricist. And I guess I can say it's Jeff Blumenkrantz. And we're so excited. He's Tony nominated. It's so weird, Jean-Paul, because he's Tony nominated for Urban Cowboy,
yeah,
which is one of the shows that Randall produced. Like, how is the
full
universe
circle,
not,
right?
Just, you know, is that not a universe thing or what? Like, just yeah. Crazy pants. And our book writer, we're in the throes of signing, so. I'm not going to reveal that just yet, but I will say that we're so excited because it just. The timing is so spot on with this, I have to say. And again, I think the universe works in interesting ways because we, not to get preachy about the show, but the messaging feels really strong because our hope is truly to inspire a dialogue about menschhood and why does that matter? And how are you showing up in the world and who are you attracting? Because everyone, especially this past year, is putting out all these memes, be kind, be good, but it's a meme. And it looks nice,
yep.
But are you actually walking the talk? You know, what does your life look like? And especially, you know, drop that into the context of dating and love. And it doesn't get better than a mensch. And I've had women say to me over the years, no, I don't want a mensch. I'm like, oh, okay. Now I know exactly why you've never had a good relationship. Yeah. And you probably never will. And for the men out there who might feel like, oh, being too nice doesn't serve me, you know, that's not true. And it's not about being nice, you know, per se, because you want to be respected, but it's about being decent and it's about kind and having somebody's back. And why would you not want that for yourself and for anybody else in the world? So if we can inspire a mensch movement, yeah, that's kind of our hope around the show. And it's not jokey, it's not a review, it's not, you know, Jewish or shticky, you know, all the things that people might perceive. Yeah. And Mensch is just the working title. We're not sure exactly what the title will be yet, but we have to see how it evolves. Yeah. But our hope is like a 900 minute through story with heart, smart humor, and takeaway so that people can leave and have something to think about. You know, no intermission, which I think is spot on for mm-hmm. where theater will be coming out of this.
Yes.
And our viewpoint is off Broadway, you know, regionally somewhere to start. And then if it's meant for Broadway, fantastic. You know, that door is always open. We'll mm-hmm. see how it evolves. But we definitely, in light of the interest in Mensch in Britain, as I said, we're definitely going to hit London and we'll see where else it belongs. But the sky is the limit. And we think it's highly commercial because it'll be fun, but meaningful. And I think really producible because we're going to aim for a smaller cast and with a shorter length. I think just all those things were smart. And that was our intention before the pandemic. So it actually just got reinforced now.
But
with everything we're dealing with. What's that?
Congratulations on getting it to that point. You know, and the fact that, you know, you left it for a while and then it came back without even you doing anything. And then just the little things that you know, happened. You met this person, you met that person, they knew this person and all that stuff. And sometimes, you know, if you force it, it's not going to happen. And you just let it happen, kind of like love and that sort of thing, right?
Sometimes you
just let it happen. So yeah, congratulations. I'm going to be watching for hashtag Mensch Movement because I'll be watching that on social media.
Thank you, yes. I have a Mensch group on Facebook, Mensch Lovers. So we're already doing the platform building. So come on over. If you want a feel good space in Facebook, that is it for sure.
Nice. So let's find out how you got to the producing part. So because you mentioned that you're a producer on Natasha and Pierre. So was it Randall that inspired that bug when you, or did you kind of have that producing bug? Because you mentioned that he, you know, introduced you a little bit of that. Tell us the progression up to there.
Yeah, I mean, certainly Randall inspired it a bit. I mean, I loved being in that world for sure. I just wasn't sure what my place was. I knew I wanted to be in the room, but it actually, you know, was kind of one of those universe moments as well. I launched an organization called motherhoodlater.com, which is a worldwide organization for women and men parenting later in life. And there was a big trend for a while in mom shows. There was Don't Tell Your Mother and like a whole bunch of PS for parenting. There was a lot happening in the theater realm around moms, like, you know, thematically for a while. And I was noticing that trend, and I started working on a marketing and promotional level with a lot of the theatrical marketing and social media firms as well, because of my audience is the sweet spot of women over 40. Mm-hmm. And I knew how to reach them given my background in marketing and PR and my reach through motherhoodlater.com. I was creating all kinds of promotional programs for lots of different shows and Broadway and off Broadway, and which I still hope to do when Broadway does reopen. And during the course of all of that, I heard there was a show that was in LA called In Mother Words, and it had been at the Geffen. And it was one of those things where I just decided to call. And I didn't even know what I was saying, Jean-Paul. And I thought, yeah, right, Robin, like call the Geffen and leave the message for who? For the show? And what do you even want? And I just said, you know, just don't overthink it. If your gut is telling you to do it, just do it. And that's one of the biggest lessons I've learned, is just make that phone call, even if you don't know why. And so I left this like cryptic message. Sorry for the phone calls there.
It could be a call about the show. They might.
Yeah, maybe.
Who knows?
Exactly. It'll go to voicemail.
Okay. We'll find out later.
Yeah, exactly. We'll do a postscript if there's anything cool that I missed. So I called the Geffen and I left this cryptic message. Hi, I'm Robin Gorman Newman, you know, calling about In Mother Words, leaving a message, I guess, for the producers. I didn't even know what I wanted. And I just kind of, you know, did it and moved on and got busy with other things. A few weeks later, I got a call back from one of the producers on the show. And we wound up having this lovely conversation, and they were interested in me because of all the reasons I said, my background in PR and marketing, my knowledge of the parenting arena, my being a New Yorker, and unbeknownst to me, the show was coming to New York.
Oh.
And that's why the universe had me make that call. And I didn't know that. And it was coming to Primary Stages, and the name changed to Motherhood Out Loud. And they sent me the script and they asked me if I wanted to get involved. And I didn't even know what that meant. And I was like, well, what do you want me to do? Of course that meant, will you give us some money? Yeah. And so I got the script and I'm reading it. And I said to my husband, I don't know. I feel like I need to do this. And he's like, all right, knock yourself out, And so I circled back to them and I said, yeah, okay. I can come on board as an investor, but they gave me the title of associate producer because it was a small production. And even though I wasn't raising money, I was doing a lot for the production. Because of my background in marketing and PR, I had the opportunity to work with them to help create a mom blogger night event. I even helped pursue like some trade advertising and promotional exposure. They really let me do a deep dive to support the show and in every way that I could creatively, given my experience. And it felt so good. And I was in the theater all the time and I was home. It was my place, to the point that my son, I had a young son at the time, and he said to me, Mommy, so where are you going all the time? I just wanted to live in the theater. And he one day said to me, can I go? And he was young then, and he's 18 now. And this was, I lose track of time, but he wasn't a teenager, that much I know. And I was like, well, I don't know, like, should you go? It's not a musical. And I'd taken him to theater when he was really young, because I've been grooming a theater lover, of course, that's a mandate in my house.
Yeah.
But I didn't know if this would be his thing, because it's not a musical. It was largely female appeal and not heavy, but not always light subjects either. So I reached out to one of the producers and I said, my son wants to go. Just stick me in the back. Just give me seats in the back in the corner. If we don't make it through, we'll leave. It was 90 minutes, no intermission, which is good. But then I thought, oh, but what if he has to go to the bathroom or something? I'm going to be in trouble here. So they stuck me in the back. I took him and he got through it.
Yeah.
Like a champ. And I couldn't believe it. And I think he was just so proud of his mom. And theater has been such a beautiful part of my life in that way, because I'm more of a girly girl. And my son is actually a volunteer firefighter. Who's into gaming and cars. He just got his first car, a Dodge Charger. And, he's sort of heavy on technology. He's everything that I'm not in all those ways, although he helps me, which is great. I have a built-in tech person. But theatrically, that's where one of the ways that we connect and travel too. But he really does love theater. And because of my work now as a producer, but I was also blogging about theater, which I still do. I write theater reviews on my website. Mm. I have others who write theater reviews on Motherhood Later as well. And I've had a chance to take him backstage, to be part of the insider crowd. He actually did tech in middle school.
Oh yeah.
And stage crew, and I loved it. And I took him backstage at Natasha Pierre and got to see some of the inner workings, and he met Josh Groban, and not that he cared, but I told him he should care, because that's kind of a big thing. And so I've loved that. It's been such a beautiful thing that theater has brought to my life. And after Motherhood Out Loud, which is now licensed and playing in lots of different places, I actually just found out this past week it's going to be a film.
Oh, wow.
In Spanish. Yeah, how cool is that? Oh. It's just, it's a subject that never gets tired. Moms are important, and, we need all the support we can get. But from that, I heard that Sylvia was coming to Broadway, and I had loved it off Broadway, and it was coming with Annalee Ashford, who's one of my favorite actresses. And I just decided to make that leap, and I became an investor on Sylvia. I was able to reach out because I was meeting people, having been on Motherhood Out Loud. And the show had a short run, unfortunately, but I bit the bug, big time. And I don't ever regret investing. That's one thing that I tell to all of my investors, except for one, were first-time investors on Natasha Pierre. And I always explain to people that by investing, you're supporting the arts. And were they're not investors, it wouldn't be theater.
Yeah.
And people can invest in the stock market and all kinds of other things. And that's a crapshoot because, you know, no one ever knows. Yeah. But the one thing that I do know with theater is that you're going to have a great time, regardless of the outcome. And I've always looked at it that way. And whether a show makes money or not, I mean, it's fabulous. You want to be part of something commercial for sure. Mm-hmm. But for me, it feels good regardless. And from Sylvia, though, I made the decision that I wanted my name in a playbill.
Okay.
And what would that look like? What would that take to get there? And again, it was one of those things I put out to the universe. And I wound up meeting a gal on the red carpet for Sylvia, who invited me onto Natasha Pierre. Hmm. And I had not seen it off Broadway. I had seen that tent, and I had never had any idea what that tent was, the casino tent. I don't know why I didn't know, because I was going to a lot of theater, yeah. But I just, you know, it just wasn't high on my radar for whatever reason. And there was a bus going out to Natasha Pierre because it was ART at the time. And she said to me, do you want me to put you on the bus? And I'm like, I don't know. Do I want to go on the bus? It's a long ride out there. How do I? It's like a 3-hour ride, had it in back and forth in one day. And so at first I wasn't so sure, but then I said, all right, stick me on the bus. But I don't live in the city. So I had to get there. It felt like the crack of dawn. I don't even know what time it was. And they're passing vodka up the aisle to, like, you know, get in the Russian mood. And so we got there 3 hours later, and I fell in love with the show. And I kind of didn't want to fall in love with the show because I wasn't sure I was ready for what that would mean. Yeah. And I walked out and I just said, uh-oh, I don't know. I think I might need to do this. And I got back home and I started talking to friends and other people to see if anyone had seen it in New York City. Mm-hmm. And they did. A lot of people had. And it was like a mad, crazy love fest for it. And I was like, wow. And again, I said to my husband, who's a CPA, so he's the practical black and white guy. Yeah. And I said, I think I need to do this. And he'd heard that before, you know, with Motherhood Out Loud. And he was like, okay, you know, knock yourself out. And we do have some separate finances, so that's a good thing. But this time I committed to co-produce. And that was a whole different animal I had never raised before. Wow. And I had a super fast raise because the show was transferring really quickly to Broadway. So I was a stressed out lunatic, to say the least. Nobody was safe, you know, in my space. I remember even going for a colonoscopy and telling my doctor, wait, before you knock me out, do you like theater? My husband was like, do you have to talk about it all the time? I'm like, yes, I do have to talk about it all the time. You don't know where the money's gonna come from.
Yeah.
And that was exactly what happened. And ultimately, I even met some investors through my son's tutor. And it does truly come when you least expect it. And yes, you have to put it out there, because I don't like to assume that it's not right for someone.
Yeah.
Because you don't know. And I always consider myself the messenger. I'm offering an opportunity for the right people. They will get excited. You know, as people in the industry know, you don't make a commission, you know, as a producer. So you're doing it for the love, you're doing it for your earnestness. Mm-hmm. And I was always very upfront with everyone about it. And I think for me, ultimately, that's why I was able to make it work as a producer, because I didn't sugarcoat it. And of course it helped having Josh Groban, because a lot of people are fans and wanted the opportunity to potentially meet him. But the show itself was so beautiful and such a different animal. And it was one of the highlights, I would say, definitely, of my life in general, theatrically and creatively. It was an honor to be part of that show and to have the opportunity to go to the Tonys, which was icing on the cake and quite surreal. I mean, to become Tony nominated with my first show out the gate, wow, was mind blowing. And I remember the day the nomination came in, and I'm surprised you didn't hear me in Toronto. I was over the moon, and my son was so pissed at me because he wanted to go to the Tonys too. And I'm like, you know, it's really expensive, and I don't know if you'd have a good time. But I said, I promise, you know, if I get back there again one day, yes, okay, I will take you. So I hope to live up to that with my son. But wow, what a bucket list experience, okay, as they say. And everybody was so new on Broadway with that show, and it was so lovely just to be in their company and the earnestness and the gratitude. And I was with them a lot. I went to the cast recording, and there was always something going. I couldn't keep up with it. It was like there was always something going on: a book signing, a Sardi's appearance, all the cast had their own bands and their own things that they were doing. And still, like, I'm still largely in touch with a number of those people, and it really did become a family, that show.
That's incredible. That experience is thank you for telling that story. And because 99.99% of us are never going to be able to have that experience. And to hear that, just the genuine pleasure of it. And it was more than just economics and putting a business. It was the family part and enjoying that whole thing.
Exactly. And seeing the joy from the audience. I mean, the night I was there, the closing night, and I sat next to a girl who had seen it like 20 times.
Oh, wow.
It's such a cult following. People dressed like characters in the show.
Really?
On the closing night. Yeah. It was like a Comic Con.
So what have you been doing over the last year and a bit while the pandemic is going on? Have you been working on new things? Have you discovered some new skills? What's been going on with you, Robin?
Well, I'm on two other musicals that are forthcoming for Broadway. I'm excited. One is The Nanny, which is inspired by the TV series.
Wow.
And the other is Face in the Crowd, which is inspired by the iconic film. So I'm a co-pro on both of those and very much look forward to seeing them come to fruition. And A Face in the Crowd will be before The Nanny and you know, potentially 2022, you know, crossing fingers on that one. And I also joined the board of New York Theatre Barn during the pandemic. And they are so extraordinary, Jean-Paul. I wasn't familiar with them really pre-pandemic. And I don't know how I got tapped into them, but I'm so glad I did. And they invited me kind of out of the blue to be on the board. And I think it's because they saw me lurking in their Zoom rooms, you know, for the different events that they were doing. And I loosely knew one of the gals because I had been involved on Be More Chill, and she was as well. So, but we didn't really know each other. And it was such a breath of fresh air, the invitation to join the board and my deciding to do that. I have to tell you that it has lifted my spirit so much during the pandemic. I'm a big team person, which is part of what I love about theater, the communal experience of it and the collaboration of it. And while I've been doing a boatload of Zooms this whole time, and whether it's virtual performance or fundraisers or with colleagues, and that's all been amazing, but it's, you know, this weird technology disconnect, which leads to a fatigue after a while, potentially.
For sure.
And to be part of Theatre Barn, and what they are, for those who might not know, is a nonprofit incubator of new musicals in various stages of development, but none of which have had a major production. So what they're really doing is showcasing new works. And first of all, it's been a beautiful thing just to know that some amazing works are being created at this time. And when it does feel like the right time for new things to be introduced, whether it's on or off Broadway, regionally or wherever it is, there's so much to look forward to. And I'm not just saying that because I'm involved with them. There really is. And these aren't shows that they're producing per se. They do spearhead the production of some that they are shepherding. But these are just shows that they have picked from submissions. Anyone can submit via their website. There was no fee to do this. And they're offering a platform and for visibility and to allow these creatives to work further on their project. And they also, what they do is they have snippets of two new musicals where they do two songs of each and they have conversation with the creatives. So it's a chance to be in that room, to have an insider experience that as a producer, I have had that by being in the room. But, you know, fans and others don't get in that room. And now you're in that room, and it might be Zoom, but who cares? It's still friggin' interesting.
Exactly.
And I've just been loving the conversation, and I'm hoping that they'll continue some incarnation of that, even as things open more. And I think they will, because I think they have recognized that conversation piece is so inspiring, and you can learn so much from that. And they've done fundraisers as well. They had a panel about inclusivity. They had a panel about women. They've been doing some choreography labs. And I'm just so supportive of their mission and their desire to lift up artists during this time. And it's really my honor to be involved with them.
Yeah, they do a great thing. I've met them a few times at NAMT and work with them. And yeah, what they're doing is a fantastic thing. And I agree. I think it will continue afterwards, because even when we get back into the theaters, we still need to learn about these new shows somehow. And
yes,
they found a great medium to do that. So. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, and as a producer, it's kind of cool too, because maybe I could run around a little less and not feel guilty if I miss a reading or a workshop, because it's always been hard to get to everything. So if I can do a little combo, you know, of Zoom and in person, that might actually work really well.
I think so. Robin, thank you so much for coming on today and talking about your book, your upcoming musicals, your producing credits, and all the stuff that you've done and the New York Theater Barn. So thank you for everything you've done for the industry.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm loving it. And I should also add that I'm on Clubhouse as well, and I'm involved with the On Broadway Club there. Mm. And so if anyone is a fan of theater and they're on the app, which is now going to be for Android as well.
That's what I'm waiting for.
Yeah.
That's killing me.
I think it just launched. So it's and it's free, and it's all, you know, it's another way to connect with people. And there's some great conversation going on there too.
Yes. So again, thank you, Robin. But before we go, I always ask three questions of my guests just to get a little bit more knowledge of who they are and get a little deeper and personal. There's no right or wrong answers, but one of the questions might have a wrong answer. So we're gonna learn more about you for that. So question number one, what creator or team within musical theater has had a great influence on you? Now, it could be a composer, a lyricist, director, producer, actor, stage manager. It could be somebody famous or not famous, like a teacher. But is there somebody in the industry that's had a big influence on you?
Well, I think I'd have a few answers for that. I mean, certainly Randall Reggett, as I mentioned, you know, having kick things off for me, and just his show of support, and of course planting the Mensch seed for the show. So that would be a big piece of it. Other than beyond him as well, Rachel Chafkin comes to mind for me, having had the chance to work with her on Comet, seeing what she did on Hadestown. She is not only such a force, such a supporter of diversity, way before the pandemic, and just the out-of-the-box creative thinking is kind of mind-blowing, how she's able to look at a project and just see things with a vision that you didn't even necessarily know was possible. Her work is really magical.
Nice. Correct answer. So 1 point.
Good.
The first question. Question number two. Is there anything else on your resume that we didn't find out about today? We know about the economics. We know about the cosmetics. Is there anything else on there that we can go, wow, really?
Yes, actually, if you want like a little known Robin fact and something that might surprise you.
Yeah.
I actually used to be the publicist for The Source, the leading hip hop magazine in the music industry. And I hung out with Puff Daddy back in the day. And I was actually a regular at rap and hip hop parties for a long time. I traveled in those circles, often being the only woman in the room and often the only white person in the room. So.
That is awesome. Definitely something we did not know. And now we know that. We can have a whole conversation about that stuff too. So.
Yes. I actually, when they hired me to be their publicist, I kind of thought they were crazy too. Like me, like what, how am I fit, you know, for this? But I had been referred to them by someone else who felt like I was. And so I got the gig and I wound up working with them for 4 years. as a consultant. And when they first hired me, it was actually the start of the East West Coast rap wars.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I remember my husband and I made plans on a Sunday, and I'd literally just gotten hired. And I got a phone call from the source, and they said Notorious B.I.G. got killed. And I was like, oh, okay. And I'm thinking in my mind, does that matter? Like, I'm sorry he's dead, but like, yeah. Is that a thing? And I, because I didn't know.
Yeah.
And then I started poking around, and I was like, oh, Notorious B.I.G., that's Biggie Smalls. Oh, I think that's like a Tupac Shakur East Coast, West Coast thing. Yes, this is huge. And I turned to my husband, I said, sorry, we have to change our plans today. I have work to do.
Oh, wow.
And I started making phone calls immediately for the source to get them on MTV and all the news, because everybody was talking about it. It was huge. So I earned my keep almost immediately as a publicist.
Oh, you're right into the fire.
Yep, exactly. You know, you go from here, I was a little girl in the suburbs, you know, of Long Island, got tapped by the leading hip hop magazine. And suddenly now I'm talking about the East Coast, West Coast wars. But I jumped on it fast and knocked it out of the park. And I think my ability then, my strength was always thinking out of the box. You know, I wear my PR hat all the time, for better or worse. It's just how I see things. And even with shows, I do that with Mensch, you know, our show. I do that. I look at things in terms of what's the message here? What's the elevator speech? What's the timeliness of it? What's the story? What's the hook? And how do you jump into that and put that out there quickly in a way that's relatable?
Yep. Because PR is PR is PR is marketing, yeah. No matter what it is, right? It's doesn't matter if it's hip hop, it's theater, it's a book,
exactly.
The fundamentals are the same. Yep.
And sometimes it's cool not to be like so immersed. You know, I think that's maybe partly why I was hired for the source, because it wasn't my world, but I was able to understand the world and respect the world and be intrigued by the world. It was fascinating. And to have, for them to have the viewpoint of someone not in it and to figure out how to translate that to expand the appeal and the reach to those who are not accustomed to it is huge.
That's very cool. Another point. Actually, a point and a half, because that's very cool. So I'll give you a point and a half on that one.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, that usually catches people off guard.
Final question.
I always say my life could be a TV series, because who, you would never expect that, this suburban chick doing the PR for the source.
Great story. That's great. Final question. Maybe okay. Important. Food in the theater or cell phones in the theater? Which is worse?
Oh, gosh. Well, at the moment, under current circumstances, food.
Yeah.
Food is really high on my concern list right now. I don't want to be sitting next to someone who's eating, you know, in a maskless. So although I so respect the theater's source of income from that, I'm really hoping that something can be figured out around those lines. And I had issues with that even before. I remember seeing On Your Feet and sitting next to a couple where their drink became a maraca during the show. And, you know, the ice banging around. I'm like, oh, that's intentionally, you know? And I'm like, oh, okay, this is not like, this is a show. Like, we're not on a dance club here. And I actually almost got into a fight, you know, with the couple about it. So, and I've had that experience on other occasions too. I remember seeing, I think it was Harry Potter, where you could actually order food from your seat and they would bring it to you. Yeah, I think it was Harry Potter. And I was with my son and I was like, holy smoke. It was actually like a little menu. And the gals next to us ordered food, which involved unwrapping the food, like real food. It wasn't like a popcorn. And I was like, really?
Like, that's not disruptive. Just handing this stuff to people and getting the orders and stuff, like, let alone the eating part. That's that.
I know. I mean, I loved the show, but I was kind of horrified by that piece of it. So, yeah. So I think food would be my pet peeve.
I also would have accepted both are horrible. So I will accept your answer though. So 3.5 points out of 3, there's no prizes, but we got to know a little bit more about you. So again, thank you. Robin, thank you so much for coming on the show. And it was great seeing you again and learning all about yourself.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thank you so much. And I haven't shared some of those stories in a long time. So this was very cathartic for me.
All right. So that we were speaking with Robin Gorman Newman here on Be Our Guest on Musical Theater Radio. Tune in next week as we'll speak with a new guest or guests about their life, love, and passion that is musical theater. I am your host, as always, Jean-Paul Yovanoff. And until next time, I'll see you when I see you.